There's space here for those guys who would like to come closer. There's space here. If not, then I'd like to introduce the next session. And this session really is going to be a bit tricky. So some of you will be sitting there as guys who use cloud. But really the title of the discussion this afternoon is Enterprise Cloud. And these are mostly for people who have invested in cloud solutions as businesses and how they run and whether actually cloud is the way to go. Now, I was speaking with someone the other day and they were saying that he works for a software company and told me that they're not going to be compensated for any on-premise installations. They're going to be compensated for everything that is going to be put on the cloud. So if you look at it from that way, behavior is already changing. We're already being told that everything now should sit on the cloud. But some of you have also gotten the experience on the other side of the spectrum, trying to connect to your VPN, trying to connect to your files in the office, trying to get access to your corporate data, and you have a problem. And so with me this afternoon are three gentlemen. Actually, they represent three of the views that I would really like to talk about. And we have Ranjan. And I'll just... Ranjit Chekaral. And he is the CEO of iColo. It's a neutral data center that was set up fairly recently. And I'll have him speak about himself shortly. I have Nick Rednick, who's the CEO of Liquid Telecom. And he'll also speak from a point of view of the people who are actually providing the communication to a lot of these data centers. And then I also have Chris Luanga, and he's a principal PM lead and partner and customer engagement rep for Microsoft. And he, in fact, Chris, I'd really like to start with you.
Okay.
First of all, to speak about your experience, because in your bio here, it says you have more than 20 years of experience.
Oh, boy.
But really talk from a customer perspective.
Correct.
When someone says, cloud is expensive, why should I just put everything on premise? Why should I be forced to go to cloud? From a customer perspective, maybe highlight and demystify what cloud really is to the audience here this afternoon.
Thank you. So at the end of the day, I think, you know, when we think about cloud, we're really talking about a set of services that help customers deliver applications that can scale to a growing consumer base without worrying about capacity. So if you have your own servers in your data center as a customer and all of a sudden demand spikes, this is just one of the many examples, then you'd have to spin up more and more services and more and more infrastructure over time, and that can be costly. You have people maintaining that infrastructure. You have one point of disaster. There's a number of scenarios that you could look at as a customer where, and this depends on size. So when I say this statement, I'm really not talking about the massive customers that have many data centers. I'm talking about the average customer that has a small size data center or maybe even a large data center, but the cost of maintaining that data center is pretty high and their customer base is spread out across a number of countries or a region, but they have a set of services they have to deliver to their own customers. And as that demand picks up or as they look at any challenges around disaster recovery, it makes sense to put it on a professionalized environment, which we call a public cloud, that enables that customer to then be able to scale anywhere in the world and serve any customer no matter where they are in the world. Okay. And so that's really the public cloud thing. On the private cloud perspective, it's what most people think about when they say they want to have something in their data center. A cloud can reside in your environment. It can reside in a public environment owned by, you know, the two or three big players, which is Microsoft and AWS primarily, and or it can sit as a private cloud on-prem. And then again, there's some players involved there. Microsoft is also a key player there. And that's typically based on a hypervisor type scenario.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Nick, talk to me about the kinds of services that you're offering to enterprise with regards to cloud solutions and cloud offering. Maybe before you do that, maybe give us a bit of a background about what Liquid is doing in this space?
Well, Liquid Telecom has been building out fiber across the continent. We're now the continent's largest single fiber operator, operating in 14 countries. The network operates as one single network. So someone sitting in Nairobi can connect to Kigali or Lubumbashi or Lusaka or Johannesburg just as easily as you would if you were connecting across Nairobi, for instance. And that entire network also creates the Liquid Cloud, providing connectivity and the cloud across all the African countries that we're in. Okay. The main focus of our continuing investment is now not so much the long-haul fiber connections that I think we always like to see on a map that shows how the continent has become connected, but more particularly on the last mile access networks. And in fact, virtually all of our investment is now going into expanding last mile investment across the continent. And that really is key for the cloud to work, we think. A lot of mobile connectivity is available, but that's how people are accessing internet. But for us, that's not really a cost-effective way of utilizing the cloud, and certainly not for enterprise to utilize the cloud. I think turning to your question about enterprise using the cloud on the continent, we did a survey to see where people were storing their data. And what we discovered is that on average in the various countries in which we operate, 80% of people's data was being stored on the end user device, which is obviously inherently risky. And we talk about the costs of the cloud, but if that data is worth something, there can't be anything more costly than storing it on an end user device. So the opportunities across the continent to really expand the cloud and get people to start using the cloud significantly more than they do now, obviously very much there. We want to get people's data off the end user device and up into the cloud.
Okay, thank you. I think that's a good summary about how you're approaching cloud, and particularly how you're setting up the infrastructure to be able to communicate all across Africa. Maybe shed some light about what the problems or any of the challenges that you have seen in your growth towards last mile connectivity for enterprises within the Africa region, in particular for those countries where organizations are connected within the Africa spectrum.
Sorry, where they're connecting?
Within the Africa spectrum.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, obviously there's the challenges of build out. I think that's there. You know, most of the countries don't have a very good legacy network. So if you look at how the cloud has been approached in Europe or elsewhere, there's a lot of leveraging off legacy networks, whether it's copper or whether it's just having the ducts in the ground. You know, in the continent, one really has to start from scratch. There's a lot of civil works, and the civil works are, you know, 70 to 80% of the cost of rolling out a network. So, you know, there's no inherent, as I said, ducts in the ground that you can use to push out fiber. So I'd say that's one of the challenges. But the other one is less of a physical challenge. It's more of getting people and potential customers to trust the networks enough to rely on the cloud. I mean, the reason why people use their endpoint devices is that they've never had the trust in their own, in the networks that they use. I mean, traditionally it's been wireless network or where it's been fixed line, the quality's been very poor, it can go down for days. You know, I think it's only really the last few years that there's started to be a comfort that the network will always be available when you need it. And you know, I think if we just, I mean, if, in fact, if we look at how telecommunications has changed, you know, just prior to 2000, most Africans had no access to a mobile telephone. Now we're talking about increased access to fiber. But even going back 5 or 6 years, fiber connections, fixed line connections, inherently unreliable, and there's still an enormous amount of distrust that the network will be there and working when we need it. And I think we're now at a turning point. The networks now are reliable, they are robust, they do have very high levels of availability.
Yes.
So I think we're now at that turning point.
So what you're saying is that, first of all, they're setting up the infrastructure, and then obviously dealing with the power issues, and then now, from a human perspective, dealing with trust on how to use, on actually adopting cloud technologies.
Yep.
Now, we've looked at it from a user perspective, we've looked at the infrastructure. I'd like to speak with you about a neutral data center and what that means for the progression or the future of cloud computing in this country, and in particular within this region. Talk to us about your story, and also shed some light about what iColo does with regards to cloud computing.
So, you know, in my mind, cloud is, there's a couple of ways to look at it. There's the technical way, there's the financial way. The financial way to look at cloud is it's a migration of CapEx to OpEx. That's a big mindset for enterprise, you know, to say, well, I'm not going to buy this, I'm going to rent this, and I'm going to pay rent for this year on year. The second part, the technical portion of it is, you know, it's more efficient. It's aggregation of inefficiencies, which otherwise would have, so we've got like five people sitting with computers in front of us. Each one of them running at 30%. If you'd put it all together, you could probably run it off Ben's computer or somebody else's computer, which basically means you have much more efficient services.
Right.
That's what data centers do. We are effectively trying to get people to aggregate their information. And you want to be in a place which is neutral, which is what iColo is, which is, you know, we allow the networks to provide competitive services, you know, in a traditional manner where it's open, customers have choice. We provide the infrastructure services. And I think that the biggest sort of story that comes out of this is people that live in the data center talk to each other, which effectively means you have a community and you're able to. So cloud's a big part of that, right? So you don't want people sitting in the Azure cloud not to talk to the people, folks in the Google cloud, you want them all to talk. Now, if they had to travel 300 kilometers to talk to each other, it's less efficient. Now, if you sit in a carrier neutral data center, the likelihood that you could speak and, you know, convert some of the inefficiencies that would otherwise arise makes it more efficient. That's the attractiveness of a carrier neutral data center.
Okay.
And also, you know, aggregation of services from a network level, where the likes of Liquid Telecom, for example, is comfortable investing large pipes or large infrastructure because they know there is going to be a sort of, you know, quantum of volume of business that they can get out of it. So they put in the right infrastructure and they build to sort of provide that. So our role in general is to provide the infrastructure, but it is also sort of bring everybody together and have a model where there is a slightly more active ecosystem.
Yeah. So many people have advanced the argument, and in particular small to medium enterprises, that I'll put my stuff on Google Cloud, or I'll put my stuff on Microsoft Cloud, or any manner of these clouds. Now, you're investing in a data center. Why?
Because, you know, Google Cloud has to live somewhere.
Uh-huh.
They live in a data center. So today they live in a data center in Sweden, but we'd like them to live in a data center in Mombasa. Eventually, when we have 42 million people in Kenya running off Gmail every single day, it makes no sense for them to pay for pipes on the undersea cable from Mombasa to Sweden. They'd just rather bring their data here. It also affects the way people are accessing these services.
Mm-hmm.
So for Google, of course, the better solution is to sort of bring that in. The problem is the numbers. So I think earlier I made the comment that the cloud industry, cloud market in Kenya is $5 million. You know, I can't tell you how much Microsoft is spending on this conference, but it's probably quite significant.
Yes.
There's nothing to say, though, in 5 years that is not going to be worth, you know, $500 million, which, I mean, I think is very well the case.
Okay.
If you take South Africa 5 years ago, most of the large cloud providers did not have any presence there. Most of them are looking at 4 or 5 megawatt single installations now in these data centers,
wow,
which is 3 or 4 times the size of the data center we're building in Mombasa. Probably all the data centers put together in Kenya cannot provide the capacity for one cloud provider in South Africa today. So 10 years forward. So a lot of this is about forward thinking.
Yes.
And a lot of this is about planning. So you can't wait for them to come to you. You've also got to build the infrastructure. But the reality is we have, you know, enough people, there's enough actually young people that want to use the internet, want to use services that are being driven by cloud, which will push them to build their instances in country.
So if I was a small business in Kenya today, and I wanted to adopt cloud, what would you guys advise me to do? Or how should I gain the trust that by putting data on the cloud that I'll be safe?
I think that this is strictly my opinion.
Yes.
It's not necessarily the opinion of Microsoft. But my opinion that if I'm a small businessman, cloud doesn't mean anything to me. Right, because I'm dealing with a whole bunch of other things on the ground. What I'm looking for is a service that I can use that can make me more efficient.
Sure.
Whatever they call it. And that service, ultimately, for us in this room, we know that's running on a cloud. But I don't care about the cloud. I care about the service that will help me, you know, do a set of things. Mm-hmm. So it's about delivering relevant, localized service that small and medium businesses can embrace, right, adopt, that make them more efficient. They essentially digitally transform them. How you digitally transform somebody that has four restaurants, that has no web presence, that has no app that can enable people to order from them, how do you enable that and deliver payments?
Yeah.
You enable that by providing a service that makes them quickly get digitally transformed. And so, you know, that's the nuance there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
For small and medium business.
Correct. What kind of assistance would you guys like to see the government provide in order to make the thoughts that you have collectively about cloud become reality?
Well, I always think that the best thing that the government can do for an industry such as ours is to keep out the way. I think the telecommunications revolution that's happened in Africa happened through private enterprise.
Right.
As I say, you go back to 2000, there was very little connectivity there. Now everyone is using a mobile phone. That was all done through private enterprise, private investment, private companies. We see a plethora of ISPs coming up, which are all private. We're seeing developers, we're seeing all sorts of cloud providers, all of which are private, and I think that they work best in a way that is not stifled by regulation, and operates in a way that people can work and be creative freely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's the best thing government can do is to create an environment that is not stifled by regulation, and where, quite honestly, they leave people to do what people can creativity do best.
Yeah. Thank you.
I was going to make. Of course, there are a couple of things I think government can do.
Like yes.
Nexus. It's good if they stay out of some of the regulation issues.
Right.
But certainly, legislation is one thing, and I'll sort of touch on that. But I also think the government should be the first guys to adopt cloud. In most of the African countries, the biggest consumer is the government. They are the biggest consumer from a tax perspective, from an employment perspective, but also from services perspective. So if some of these governments adopted using cloud services, which for sure would be a more efficient, safer process, would help build that initial bulk that is required for the likes of Microsoft to come and build cloud instances in this country. I think the second issue, which is something that people don't like to talk about, is till legislation is mature, by mature I mean things like data privacy, access is sorted out, which is you have laws similar to what that exists, why Sweden is more interesting than, say, Algeria. We have laws that protect consumer data, that's it. You will never find these large cloud players building compute nodes in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It'll never happen. That's the simple reality of it. For that to happen, we need mature laws. Laws that take care of things that, otherwise today are not sort of taken care of. As an example, if there was a crime committed in Kenya using Gmail, then in theory you can, as per law, we can go and seize the service. Not just my data, but everybody's data, which is not what we want. And so I think there's that portion which has to come through legislation, a bit of maturity. So we're sort of dancing around it at this stage, but yeah, nobody's sort of taking
it. I think that's a very important point.
Yes.
I don't see the arrival of really big cloud in the absence of adequate data protection. And, we are seeing data protection laws coming in some countries, but I also think that a harmonization of those data protection laws is something that would be enormously helpful for the industry.
Okay. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Finish. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
So I think I want to flip that a little bit.
Yes.
So that, the question of the government, I want to talk as if I was a startup.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of startups in the room. I think as a startup, I want to make sure the ease of doing business is there, that it is fast for me to create a startup and it's easy, the laws are there and the right infrastructure is there to support me, that when I innovate, that my IP is protected, and that what I innovate on, there's no piracy associated with it. I think if those three things are done, it's a great first step for government. And then I agree with my colleagues here that the government also becoming a consumer and delivering services to enable the three things I mentioned, for example,
yeah,
and other things,
yeah,
would be great.
Oh.
I think that would be a good thing.
Excellent. Ranjan, I'll come back to you because you talked about aggregation and how siloed this market of yours is. Maybe talk to us about some of the things that you're doing with iColo that are helping aggregation and what it is that you're pitching so that cloud computing within the environment for which we live becomes cheaper, but at the same time becomes faster.
So cloud is really an amalgamation of software, hardware, and networks. That's basically what cloud comes down to. If you take Kenya, for example, our economic hub is in Nairobi, which basically means most of our enterprise is located here, most of the business is conducted here. Our second city is Mombasa. Mombasa is unique in the view from the fact that all our cables that go across the eastern seaboard of Africa land in Mombasa. It is more expensive in many ways to buy a trunk between Europe and Mombasa than Mombasa, Nairobi. It's gotten better, certainly now more competitive, but it is nowhere near where it needs to be. So remember I said software, hardware, and networks. An IP transit sort of box, and I know people will contradict me, is probably about $50 a meg these days. Now it's come down to 30, some slightly more competitive when you buy volume. Europe, it's 50 cents. You can't compare the two cost-wise. So ultimately, the same consumer is paying for the same service in Europe here, or there's a difference because the networks are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And the likes of Liquid, JTL, a whole bunch in Kenya have built networks now, big pipes,
yeah,
connecting the sites,
yeah,
running at very low utilization. So to a large extent, I think when you start centralizing these nodes, when you start building hub points between A to B, more of these resources start sitting at endpoints, the business case starts becoming better for these guys that are building these pipes because they know the demand is coming there. So, for example, if Microsoft sets up an edge node in Mombasa and then sort of consumers sit in the ADC data center in Nairobi,
yeah,
it then makes a lot of sense for the network guys to discount it because that business is not going away.
Yeah.
It's only going to grow.
Okay.
So that's part of the role that we have. Then I think also some of the services that would happen within a data center today happen in three or four different locations. If you can bring all of that together, I think it sort of fosters, a bad example, but if you look at our IX in Kenya, we run it a gig or a little bit more than that. Frankfurt runs at 5.5 terabits. That's one of 15 exchanges in one data center. You can't compare, and it's not true that Kenya has only one gig. There's plenty. It's completely disaggregated. So if you put all of that together, then it becomes much easier for folks to put together. Another example would be, if we had a data center which is carrying all the IXs the ISPs are connected there, it's very easy then for a cloud service provider to come and put a node there so that everybody then connects from that single source. Today, the way it works is everybody builds their little installations in their own little data centers, the ISPs. So you've got 10 to 15. So this is what I mean by sort of amalgamating services. It's more efficient, it's cheaper, and ultimately the consumer pays for it, right? So there is a cost for Liquid when they host Google's, the cache in,
yeah,
their server versus,
yeah,
accessing it from a single point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean by the maturity of the market comes when everybody sort of starts working together, and that's part of our role.
Excellent. So having been given that precursor to this discussion, are there any questions? I'll open the floor. Is there a roving mic? Take some questions for the floor. There's a question in the front here.
Oh boy.
And then there's another question. Make the questions brief.
Thanks, guys. My name is Wally. I work for Microsoft. So my question is going to be primarily
it's
for
a biased question.
Nick, Nick and Ranjit, actually, because I know everything and more about what Chris thinks about this.
Yes.
I wanted to hear your opinions about, you know, how do you see the African cloud, you know, players playing out? There's this notion when we started, you know, a few years back, that it was going to be 2-3 major international players in the cloud, and, you know, all the other players will end up having to, you know, either just amalgamate and not be part of this, you know, the cloud space. But we're seeing that that is different right now across the world. There are hosters, you know, springing up in different places, and they have regional plays. In Africa, do you expect that to be the same way that goes, or do you see, you know, major players coming together and, you know, being the dominant forces across the continent? And I also ask, whatever your opinion is on that, why?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously there are dominant players in the world already, and the internet has no borders. So I think we are likely to see the big players emerging as big players here in Africa too. And I think that's a good thing. You know, up until now, people have been accessing and using the services of the big players, yet those big players have not been here. They have been offshore, and Africans have had to pay for international bandwidth in order to access those services. And that's also why I'm very excited by what Microsoft is doing, because I think for the first time we are seeing one of the big cloud players coming to Africa and investing in Africa. You know, not just going on, you know, some game viewing, but actually investing in, you know, in data centers, bringing resources here, bringing people, employing people, but so also putting down infrastructure and investing in infrastructure here. So I think this is, you know, so I think we've reached a turning point. And as I say, what I've seen at the conference, and you know, what I see Microsoft starting to do in terms of real engagement and investment in Africa is very, very exciting.
So I do think, you know, the dominance of the large internet cloud service guys will continue here. But like with most things, it's a fairly generic service. And the challenge would be to start catering for very specific requirements in the region. So, for example, if you're a 600-man car dealership, right? So you have an enterprise cloud that works off. It's not so easy to integrate that into Azure. On the other hand, there's a local IT player that will put together a stack, which is custom, which, you know, so those requirements will never go away. And you know, I think for the plug and play part, you know, which is the very low end and the very high end, where it makes sense for consumers to work with the large providers, yes. But I certainly think the enterprise space, you will still see a lot of local cloud service provider, which is evident today in Kenya. There's tons of hybrid cloud folks. There are many people masquerading as public cloud, but in fact it is private cloud. And it's not obvious to us here. So I do think you will still see segmentation in the market. What you may not see is a Pan-African cloud services player. But within each segment, you will still see, of course, still dominated by the likes of Microsoft. Yeah.
Thank you. There's a question from a gentleman in the back there, and then there's a question here.
Yeah, thank you. my name is John Paul. I'm a founder of a startup, a medical 3D printing startup called Novocell Africa. So to do what we do, we need imaging data. And when it comes to healthcare, you understand that the data is very sensitive. So my question to the panel was, what's the arena like? Are the big healthcare institutions and the universities picking up the cloud technology to transfer and use their data? Yeah.
You too. happy to take a stab at that. Mm-hmm. We have this concept in the public cloud space where you get different certifications. So the most important thing about public cloud providers, and there's really a small handful of them in the world, Microsoft being one of them, is that you get certified by federal, by government entities, you get certified by folks in the healthcare scenario, again, typically a government sanctioned certification. And the whole purpose of that is to deliver a sense of trust and security to the end consumers of that public cloud, that your cloud will ensure that their data is secure and can be leveraged using that infrastructure of the cloud. So that's a key thing to look at. When you're making a decision as a startup, who do you want to partner with in the public cloud, it is important to understand, based on the laws in the country that you're in, what adherence is that public cloud providing to ensure the safety of the data of patients, et cetera. But there are private institutions, healthcare institutions. Like for example, in the US, we're HIPAA compliant, which is the one of the big compliance pieces that you need as a public cloud in order to play in the health space, right? So what's the equivalent? I suspect you're a Kenyan startup, is that correct?
Yes.
What's the equivalent in Kenya? When we were talking about what can the government do, has the government thought through some sort of regulation that ensures protection of patient data in Kenya? For those types of things are some of the areas where you need some sort of guidance from the government around the levels of certification or policies that need to exist to ensure that public providers of the cloud are protecting the data that you as a startup puts up in their cloud. But I'll tell you that for the Microsoft cloud, we are HIPAA compliant and we do work with medical facilities all over the world that put amazing innovation on top of our cloud.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else wanted to?
I have spoken to some of the hospital institutions here, and the view is that public cloud is too public, mm-hmm. and most of them are looking at a private cloud installation. Some of them are not looking at any cloud installations, but there are one or two, and I think what you find the difference between the two is just management, openness, the idea how far along they've come. So there are one or two hospitals that are actually looking to move to a private cloud installation, which they would build and they would manage. So not quite hybrid, but certainly moving in that direction.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask a question about last year there were quite a number of internet shutdowns.
Maybe tell us who you are.
I'm Ben Roberts, Liquid Telecom. So last year there was a number of internet shutdowns imposed by governments all over Africa. Often some of these were around election times and other such issues, and mostly to sort of suppress chatter on social media. As the next, maybe in 4 years' time, 5 years' time, when the next round of elections are coming, if Africa and small medium businesses are really reliant on the cloud, what are the dangers of internet shutdowns and damaging the economy, and the panel want to comment on that.
So your question is?
Is that how internet shutdown, like government shutting down the internet, if you're using cloud services, then yeah. You're not going to work. So
yeah.
What are the dangers to the possible dangers to the economy?
Okay. I think I'll start with you, Nick.
Okay. Well, I think in some of the countries we operate in, we've had that. And there's not a lot as an operator you can do when the regulator or the government says that you need to turn something off. But that said, I think it really is a central issue when you look at people's constitutional rights, because I think that access to a telecommunications and a communications network is now more and more being recognized as a fundamental human right. Freedom of speech is no longer about the right to stand up and say what you wish. It's more now about having the ability to do so and the network to do so over social media, mm-hmm. and the like. And I think we're already seeing in a number of constitutions and certainly in international human rights conventions that free and open access to a telecommunications network is being internationally recognized as a fundamental human right and fundamental to people's freedom of expression. So, you know, certainly, you know, the European Union Convention on Human Rights recognizes that. Some of the African treaties of the African Union and COMESA have recognized that. So, of course, there's nothing to stop a government ignoring all that. But I think, you know, more and more as we start to see access to a network being enshrined in constitutions and in international human rights treaties, governments should become less and less inclined to violate those rights by turning off networks.
I know, Ranjit, you had a...
It's a hard question to answer, so I'll pass to you.
Chris?
I think that Nick answered it well.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, if a network provider is asked to turn down the network, it does impact businesses are using the cloud.
Yeah.
Even if it's a private cloud that's providing an end solution out to a local market beyond the corporation's network. Right, so it is a tough problem. And back to your original question, what should government do? I think those are some of the things government should think through.
Yeah.
I personally think they should never shut down a network, but if they were to shut down a network, they should ensure that it's done in a way that doesn't impact business.
Yeah.
That it maybe is a specific, you know, like they do in most of the Western countries where they can shut down a site, you know, they shut down an entity as opposed to the entire network.
The entire network, yeah.
Right? I think that's where we need to progress as a continent.
Yeah.
Cameroon right now is going through this challenge right now where a part of the country is shut off. And, you know, so these are some of the things that we hope that the AU and the UN, et cetera, the international organizations we have in place will continue to progress on policy and implementation of that policy so that we stop this process, this business of shutting down entire networks.
Yeah. And I think to your question, it's a very valid question. I remember C.S. Mushero being asked that same question because of the impending elections, and he was saying, we will not shut down the internet. But I think there has to be a groundswell by businesses to show that they actually rely on using these networks in order to survive, because by shutting them, you're actually shutting the economic engine of a country. And so we'll wait and see to see what progresses between now and August.
I also think, well, never mind Kenya, I think hopefully that seeing as Donald Trump uses Twitter a lot, you know, he won't be heading in that direction. So.
That is true. There was a question there. I'll come back to you. We can't hear you. Maybe state who you are and where you're from, get to know you. Is there another mic? No, maybe give him that one.
My name is Antipas Akala Masiongo. I'm the founder of Global Innovation Society of Kenya. We nurture, promote, and protect innovators. What I wanted to ask, I don't know, what is the percentage uptake of cloud in Kenya or Africa vis-a-vis global? And I think when you said your discussion, you said something about demystifying cloud. I think I have some of our members in our society who are finding it difficult to sell that product. So how can you help? I don't know if you've discussed that, demystifying. Sorry, I was out of logo. How do you now, that percentage uptake of cloud vis-a-vis global in Kenya, do you have that data?
Okay. It's a good question, and I think there are two questions in one in that question that he's just asked. First is the uptake of cloud implementations or cloud services in Kenya and as well as the region. And then the second one was demystifying cloud. I like the demystifying cloud because you'll go to a government office, where I was a consultant, I still am a consultant, and you'll try and sell stuff in services about why they should use the cloud. And they'll tell you, no, our policies state that all our data has to be in country, therefore we have to use the cloud. If you can find somebody who's offering cloud services in country, we are going to use them. Then you ask him, okay, I'll send you an email. Where should I send it? Say, share it. I have Google Drive. I'll put it on, send it to my Gmail account. You know, this local one doesn't work. So we use Google. And so you, and I'm sure most of you who are laughing have seen that. So maybe in the two sections of questions, maybe I'll start with you because you had some data that, and as well as Nick, I'm sure you have some data about what you call cloud services penetration. And then also for all of you, maybe to shed some light about the demystification, I guess, through training and understanding about what cloud really means to people.
So, I mean, I think you're right. If you look at the number of people that use Gmail, then you're probably looking at more than 60-70% of Kenya actually being using cloud services.
Right.
But if you look at sort of enterprise cloud, and you know those numbers are quite small. So the Kenyan IT sector is somewhere between $1.5 billion to $2 billion. The cloud enterprise market, excluding the hardware piece, is about $5 million today, according to Frost and Sullivan. So the likelihood that you know we have big penetration, it's I would say it's high because people are using the services, but from an enterprise perspective, it's still low. So you know, I don't think people realize they're using the cloud when they use a lot of things.
Yeah.
To demystify it, frankly, it's another service. You know, whether the only people who really understand the distinction between a cloud service and sort of a is the developers or the guys on the network side who are actually building the equipment. By and large, most consumers don't understand the difference.
Yeah.
Like you just pointed out.
Right. Nick.
Well, obviously, I think everyone who's got a mobile phone uses the cloud. But I think, you know, what that really shows is how many people are using the cloud for minor applications and how many people are really using it for enterprise and to promote their businesses. And, you know, I think if you look, I think the continent is still over-reliant on the use of mobile technology as a means of accessing the cloud. You know, if you look at Europe, the average mobile user uses about 9 gigabit of data. At their home, they are using about 10 times that, they're using about 90 gigabit. Now, what we see on the continent is that differential is not so big. We're still over-reliant on using mobile technology, and the mobile technology is expensive. If you look at average cost prices, if you're going to consume, let's say, 500 gigabit of data over a period, that costs you on average on the African continent about $2,000 to access over a mobile network, and roughly about $100 to access on fiber or fixed line. Yet, the majority of people are still reliant on mobile devices to access the cloud. And that means that accessing the cloud in a meaningful way is really unaffordable for them.
Okay. Chris, any comment?
Yeah, I think that first I want to go back to how we typically think about the cloud at Microsoft. I think we believe that your example of a government customer that wants the data to reside in their environment, we are working towards bringing the cloud to customers through Azure Stack.
Good.
And we also have a public cloud that's probably one of the most scalable, highly available clouds on the planet. And we also have a private cloud offering through our Windows Server that supports everything from containers and other types of technology. So it's about giving choice and options to developers and innovators. And I also believe that from the consumption side of it, so that's the demystifying the cloud. The cloud is essentially a set of options that you have as an innovator to decide how you want to deploy your technology. Do you want to deploy it in a public cloud? Do you want to deploy it in a hybrid cloud, which for us is Azure Stack? Or do you want to deploy it in your private cloud? Do you want to use new technology from companies like Docker, et cetera? We support all of that. But then on the flip side of it, you know, as an innovator, you also want to make sure that you're delivering relevant services. So I believe that consumption of the cloud, to drive consumption of the cloud, which was the second part of the question,
right.
It's about delivering localized services that are relevant for the region and the market. Because, you know, one shoe doesn't always fit everyone in the world. There's some things that everyone needs, like everyone needs email. So why not use Office 365? We also believe that most people do some sort of word processing, so hopefully they'll use Word. And they do presentations, they'll use our PowerPoint, but all those things are delivered in a cloud scenario today, right? And are available again, like Nick was saying, to be consumed through mobile devices, which is the, the first technology people adopt on the continent. So, you know, consumption for me is gonna be driven for the cloud when first party services are created on the continent that are relevant to consumers and enterprise. And then where the data resides is all gonna depend on that end customer. But for us at Microsoft, we've taken the stance that we'll deliver the technology that helps you still enable you to deploy whether you want the data to reside locally or you, whether you want it to be scalable and be delivered across the world.
Across the world. So I have just enough time to take one more question. There was a comment here by this gentleman who I had said I was going to follow up with you. And then there's the question, the guy, the checkered sweater, and then there's one question here, right? And then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, so a closing point in what
one
you
one question. Okay.
Fine. Yeah, on the point you said about the business giving up, they have to object, was in one country where we did have an internet shutdown imposed by the government, they asked us to shut down social media. We said we can't do that without shutting off the whole internet. So they shut off the whole, they told us to shut off the whole internet. We did just that. And 12 hours later, they told us to turn it back on again when an oil company who was drilling for oil in their country complained, said we can't send any exploration data back to our office and our businesses offline. So it does demonstrate taking the hard line makes the business community fight back.
Okay. Thank you all. I mean, this is an incredible topic, as you've seen. There are several things that, in wrap-up, I'd like to highlight. We've talked about government interventions on how to run cloud. And I think the support from an what you'd call a policy perspective allows for people to be comfortable that cloud services are actually the way of the future and that that is where we all should go. Secondly, I think, and we didn't explore it a lot more, was the availability of power, the availability of reliable power to allow for people to store things where they know they will get them, because there's nothing as bad as not being able to access vital data or vital business data without reliable electricity or reliable power. Third, I think there's the element of training. I'm reminded of a cartoon that was in the newspaper where somebody was saying they'll get stuff to the cloud, and you see him with a catapult with a cabinet tossing it up in the air saying that I'm sending my documents to the cloud. I think there's an understanding of what cloud really means to you and your business as far as access, storage, and usability, and obviously also sharing and collaboration in order to make yourselves more competitive. There's another issue that is also raging amongst a lot of things and we've talked about, which is the price points. Some people are saying, I want to keep everything on premise because it's cheaper than actually this cloud leasing option. I think it is something that needs to be explored. And I think as costs go down through aggregation, which is the point that I was trying to make when I was asking you about that question, is that more and more services get integrated or aggregated, then the costs of those kinds of services start to come down. Obviously, there are lots of tools, and Chris has made it very clear about what tools are available. And I would ask that you actually explore them, because I think if it is not for your firm, then it is for other firms that you're collaborating with in order to make it a success. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time, for sharing your insights and knowledge, and I look forward to any discussions that we have in the future. Let's give them a warm round of applause.